Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is the Weekly Comics Spotlight 257 for comics originally released on July 11th, 2012. This is also the 650th episode of the Comic Book Page podcast. Starting us off in DC is Demon Knights number 11. Now, what did you think of this one, Bob?
I like Demon Knights. It's one of my favorite series coming out from the New 52, and this issue was pretty good. I mean, they're making their journey to, I guess they're calling it Alba Sarum, and it's some kind of a Camelot thing. We had last issue, there was some weird stuff going on last issue. That giant sea serpent with the people riding around his head was kind of crazy. But this issue, I kind of like the King Arthur connection. There's some interesting things going on here. The characterization of the different people on the team is kind of falling into that groove where, you know, you're kind of used to how the different people act. Al Jabbar, I kind of liked, you know, when they were turning people into the best that they can be, or what do you want to call it, you know?
Well, I mean, what I thought about that is Paul Cornell did something pretty clever here. He's employing the use of dark magic within the story to show kind of a warped version of how these characters envision themselves sort of as they want to be. But, I mean, this is dark magic, so those desires are kind of the be careful what you wish for sort of a thing.
Yeah.
So Al Jabbar thinks of himself as just the intellect, so his body almost shrivels up and he becomes... Yeah. Almost like a MODOK looking thing.
Yeah, I liked that. That was very cool. And you know, like Vandal Savage, I was like, I'm just like myself, only more handsome. And he's like kind of caveman looking, you know, which kind of speaks to his character, who's, you know, been around since the caveman days. And, you know, the demon was even demonier.
It was a clever way to advance the plot and show how these characters kind of see themselves. And it could have been just transforming him almost any which way, but the fact that he used it to reveal more about the characters, I really liked.
And I really like the art that Diogenes Neves is doing here. Now, you have this Robson Roca. Roca is coming in doing some of the work. I guess I could go back through. I didn't notice any pages that looked wildly different as I was going through it.
Neither did I, but I wasn't really looking for a difference in art style.
Well, yeah, I just, when I looked back afterwards, I mean, I read it the first time and I didn't notice anything. The story seemed to flow, right? And then I noticed that it was two different artists. And a lot of times when you see that, it's relatively apparent. You know, they have like maybe flashback scenes or something and they're in a couple of different styles. I think that they did a good job on keeping the art looking pretty consistent throughout on this.
Yeah, but I think there were a couple of places with the King Arthur stuff where the art was not as good, and I would attribute that, frankly, to the other artist, because I think Diogenes Neves has been doing a great job on this series.
Yeah, he's a great artist, and he was not on my radar before, but he is now.
I can totally understand that based on the work he's doing here. I was surprised how heavy this was kind of on the Arthurian and Camelot mythology and stuff. I mean, King Arthur himself teams up with the Demon Knights in this issue. And nothing good or bad about that, I just thought it was very interesting they decided to go kind of very whole hog into that. And of course, it's been an aspect of the series since it began, but to put it so front and center was kind of interesting. And overall, I thought this was a good issue, but very much kind of a middle chapter. I mean, the story in this issue started with the characters morphed into those warped versions, and I could see where that might make it a little difficult for new readers to kind of get into the story and figure out what's going on. Whereas... if this had started just a few seconds earlier as they're morphing, and we see the before and after, I don't know, maybe that would have worked better, maybe it wouldn't have, but I certainly would have considered that. Quite a bit happened in this issue, but I don't know if it's just because, you know, it's been just long enough since I read the previous issue or whatever, or what, but I didn't find myself getting as sucked into the story in this issue as much as I have in previous issues. And I'm not entirely sure what that was, because I don't think it was any fault of the story necessarily.
Well, you know, they're changing it up. I mean, I was curious on what was going to happen for after that first arc, because they couldn't just keep them in that city under siege, you know, for the whole time. So now they're off kind of doing a questy kind of thing, which is, you know, relatively typical for, you know, fantasy-ish medieval type of comics or stories in general.
Yeah.
I like it because it's a good change of pace. I mean, certainly it stands out from the other New 52 titles that I'm reading, and I would imagine it stands out from the ones I'm not reading also, in that, you know, you're reading far more of them than I am.
I'm still reading all of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's got the DC Universe, and it's got characters that are established DC Universe characters, but it doesn't feel anything like the other DC comics, right?
Well, and that was one of the smart things.
And I like that.
Yeah, the smart things about doing this series is between both the time frame when it is set and therefore being a fantasy medieval kind of a thing versus a modern-day superhero, I mean, that just right off the bat set it up as a very different kind of a title. It's got the very mystical, magical element to it, which also sets it apart. And like you said, it makes it unique among the New 52, which, you know, with 52 titles, having 52 totally unique things, of course, would be virtually impossible. You know, add to the fact, you know, a quarter of them are Batman-related titles, and a quarter of those are Batman titles, literally. You know, so having something that is just different from the rest, you know, I think was a smart move. Now, they tried that on a few other titles as well, to varying degrees of success and failure. You know, Men of War being another such example. So I think finding something that strikes a chord with the audience or whatever is, you know, something of a challenge. But I think they're doing a good job here. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but this isn't setting the world on fire sales-wise, but it's doing okay. So I hope they keep it around just because it is sufficiently different than the rest, and it kind of gives them that added feel of diversity to their line. And I suspect they'll give it a little bit more leeway than if this were just another superhero title.
I hope so. You know, I hope that it sticks around and lets Paul Cornell tell this story. I mean, it's as long as Paul Cornell wants to do it, I'm here as long as they keep publishing it.
Well, I think they could find other writers and stuff that could do this sort of thing fairly well, too. I think they could find quite a few that could do it really poorly as well, but I mean...
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. You're right. They could. And it's like, if they change the creative, if they change the writer, I would try out the new book. You know, I wouldn't immediately drop it unless, you know, I don't know that there's any single writer at DC that I would kind of out of hand dismiss. So I would try whoever followed, you know, I would just crossing my fingers. So the whole time saying, oh boy, I hope the new guy can follow on.
Well, yeah, if they brought some new creative team on and they decided to go in a bold new direction, well, of course they're going to scare off readers. I mean, that's just a given. But, you know, hopefully Paul Cornell will stay on this for a while, keep doing what he's doing. For me, this was a strong 3 out of 5. It was good. Like I said, it didn't suck me in as much as some of the past issues, but I feel that way about many titles that I enjoy sometimes. So
4 out of 5 for me.
I can
solid
4 out of 5. Okay, next up, we've got Space Punisher. Now, this is one that I'm kind of expecting when we see the July numbers is going to be not near the top of the list. Just, I mean, the concept. Punisher in space. Okay, simple enough concept, got it. The solicit for this? Kind of minimalist. It basically said he was going to be in space, he was going to be going after the criminal hierarchy in space. Okay, it's Space Punisher. From space, I got the space part. From Punisher, I got the Punisher part. Really helpful solicit. But I will admit, I was curious. I mean, they've got Frank Thierry on the writing, Mark Texiera on the art. I mean, that's a good creative team, particularly for Punisher. I wanted to see what they were going to do with it. Now, going in, I wasn't sure if this was going to be the regular Punisher in space or a slightly futuristic sci-fi alternate universe and featuring the Punisher. Because, like I said, the solicit didn't really clarify that. Having read this, it's very clearly a slightly futuristic sci-fi alternate universe. Now,
did they make it clear in this issue, or let's just say, I had read something that they were going to do. They were leaving themselves open to do kind of a whole space continuity or spacey universe, kind of like, you know, they do all the Marvel zombies and stuff, yeah. Or all the noir or something like that, where this one would be like, you know, you got like Spider-Man in space, Hulk in space, Thor in space, although I guess Thor is in space anyway, but in this space. Did they introduce other characters in this, or was it just Punisher?
Oh, they introduced a lot of other characters in this. As to whether, you know, this was essentially what if the Marvel Universe were in a Star Trek-y kind of a, you know, interplanetary kind of a realm instead of just on Earth and mainly in New York. So we get a lot of characters that are, you know, new versions of existing characters. Some they just kind of reuse the name, like Starjammer and Corsair. Others are very clearly alternate versions of the Marvel names. I mean, he's going after the six capos of the six-fingered hand. That's the big criminal organization or whatever. And there's a lot of very familiar names in that. You know, among them are Dr. Octopus, Green Goblin, Magneto, Red Skull, and Ultron. But very clearly, very different version, alien versions of these characters. So, you know, with the Dr. Octopus and a Green Goblin, is there a Spider-Man in this world? Quite possibly. But, you know, we don't see Spider-Man himself in this. But, you know, could they have the rest of the Marvel characters in some way, shape, or form? Oh, certainly. Certainly. This was very much, like I said, a Punisher title, as if that were how the Marvel Universe was. Now, there'd been a lot of jokes of, you know, how in a zero-G thing is he going to fire a gun with bullets, that whole, you know, action-reaction with the recoil and stuff. They get around that pretty easily. He's sporting, at the beginning of this, a sonic gun and a blaster. You know, but that's because he's going after the Sim Brood Ant Queen, which is kind of a mix of the Brood and the symbiont stuff, who he kills off at the beginning of this issue. And that, of course, was the sixth capo, or the first of the six, of the six-fingered hand. So presumably he's going to go after the other five in the other three issues of this. You know, there were quite a few things where it's like, okay, let's see how the classic Punisher stuff would show up in this reality. You know, typically he's got, you know, Microchip is kind of his weapons guy or whatever. In this case, he's got Chip, which is a robot AI kind of a thing that the Punisher apparently created. And this robot has, like, arms that can morph into, like, Gatling gun-looking, you know, blasters or whatever. It's very much the same kind of a character for Punisher. In some cases, maybe a little amped up, maybe not. I mean, I'm reading the current Punisher series, but I'm not going to claim to have read everything they've done with the publisher, certainly none of the Max stuff. This version of the character doesn't really know the concept of restraint and limited firepower. When he goes and blows up the symbiont queen, he does it essentially with a black hole bomb. So a little bit on the, you know, overkill mentality on a couple of levels. Overall, I mean, this wasn't bad. It wasn't brilliant either. It's more or less pretty much what you would expect if you took the Punisher and transplanted him into a slightly futuristic sci-fi alternate universe where things cross galaxies and planets and stuff. But it's still true to the concept of the Punisher. You know, in this issue, they set up the premise, the characters, and the basic conflict, I think, fairly well. They leaned heavily on, you know, you getting some Easter eggs if you're familiar with the Marvel Universe. But I don't think there was anything that hinged on you having to know the Marvel Universe to really understand it. I think they could have done a little bit better job setting up why this Punisher is doing what he's doing. Presumably we'll get a little bit more backstory on that in future issues. So, you know, it was fun. I think it's, you know, did they need to do this? Of course not. Are they going to do more of it? Yeah, they are. I mean, this goes back to, like we were talking about, the noir stuff and a few other, the manga line. Where it's, let's take the classic Marvel characters, transplant them into a different setting, venue, or style, and just run with it for a little bit. They'll get a couple of miniseries out of this. Maybe they'll try for more, maybe they won't. I don't know. You know, is it worth getting? It depends if the concept of a sci-fi take on the Punisher really interests you or not. There are going to be some people who say, wow, that sounds like fun, let's get it. There are going to be other people who have no interest in that. You know, I liked it, but it isn't for everybody.
What's the price tag on this? Remind me, it's $3.99? Is it a regular? Is it oversized?
It is $3.99. It is got the free digital copy. It's 23 pages.
Okay. Well, decent. I mean, it's at least not a 20-page story.
And answering your question of if they're setting up other characters and stuff, next issue we see the Hulk.
Okay.
So, yeah. For me, this was a solid 4 out of 5. It was interesting. It set out to do what it, you know, did what it set out to do. Was it the most, you know, unique of concepts? No, but I don't expect that out of everything. If I did, I'd be reading, you know, virtually no comics, because at this point, most of them are derivative. So, you know, I was happy enough with it. You know, would I have preferred it at a $2.99 price tag? Yeah. But that's true of most $3.99 books for me.
Comics want to be $3.99, I've heard.
I don't know who you heard that from, but I think they're wrong.
It was Brian Michael Bendis, I believe.
Well, that explains a lot. I think Mark Waid's onto something with putting his digital stuff out free.
I actually heard it from a lot of publishers at San Diego Comic-Con this year, too, in the context of comics saying that they think that their comics are worth $3.99. On the digital comics price fight panel, the IDW guy was espousing that theory. The Valiant publisher was saying that. So, but I would expect that from a publisher. They've got to think that what their price point is a fair price point.
Any publisher putting stuff out predominantly at the $3.99 price tag is, of course, going to say their stuff is worth that. Otherwise, they're flat out saying, yeah, we're overcharging you and we know it.
Yep.
And that's a suicidal business move. But I really think if these publishers really thought their stuff, you know, was worth that, they'd do a better job of you know, making the consumers feel that way too. You know, the fact that on most titles, there's attrition to a noticeable percentage each and every issue implies that there is some segment of the audience each and every issue that didn't think it was worth the price.
Right.
So that, to me, is a problem.
No, that's a very fair point. And, you know, it's like, it's a combination, right, of price point and story. I mean, in some cases, someone's going to read a story and it doesn't matter if it was a dollar, they're not going to like it. But I think a lot of people will combine the enjoyment they got out of something along with the price tag that was associated with it.
Oh, totally. Did they get the enjoyment that, you know, they felt they paid for? But I would think, going to your point of, you know, not all stories are for everybody. I mean, I completely agree with that, but I would think there comes a point within a title's life cycle where it's kind of found its audience and it ought to level off. In some cases, it even ought to go up, because even if particular readers didn't like it, others that would should have found it by then. And when you look at most titles over a lengthy time period, it keeps going down. So to me, the is it worth the money aspect has got to be a major factor in that. But, you know, we'll see how things play out, you know, going forward. As for the $3.99, that's what comics want to be priced at. DC, rolled back their price. That's the first time they've really ever done that. And I think that was the right move. And I think their sales are reflecting that, among other things, with the reboot and the new 52. But if they had rebooted at $3.99, I really don't know they would have seen the either the sales success or the profit that they're seeing now.
Oh, I agree with you on that. I think that keeping slavishly to the $3.99 price point would have been disastrous for them.
Well, and I think in some cases, particularly when they're doing split book formats, they'd be better off splitting them into two slimline books, doing them at $1.99.
Or just doing one, like on the war book, you know, just...
Yeah.
Just do one war book, make it $2.99, 20 pages, and pick one or the other, you know?
Yeah.
Either do War That Time Forgot and Unknown Soldier, or pick one or the other, you know, do them as miniseries, do something. But, you know, doing that book at $3.99, I think, is one of the factors. It's not the only factor, I'm sure, but it's one of the factors that's kind of holding that one back. And I think the same for All-Star Western. I like the backup stories in that in general, but boy, I think that's a tough one. I think a lot of people are skipping over it, and I think it's a great book, but I think a lot of people are skipping over it because of the price tag.
Well, yeah, because unless you want all of the content, why pay the price?
Yeah, I mean, it's different on those books because they're kind of niche genres. And it's very, you know, when you're selling, you know, Action Comics by Grant Morrison and Justice League by Jeff Johns and Jim Lee for $3.99. I mean, people are, you know, and Batman, you know, people are knocking each other out of the way practically to buy those books because they're the big creators, the big books, and, you know, people want to get those. And, you know, to some extent on those, they're charging $3.99 because they know they can get away with it. You know, it's just these books are going to sell, so let's take the extra money on them. But, you know, when you go to GI Combat and All-Star Western, I think it's hurting those books, the price tag.
I would agree with that. Shall we move on to our other book?
Valiant, number one. The third number one from Valiant in 3 months. We've got Bloodshot, number one. What do you think of this one, John?
This one, actually, I found very interesting. I mean, Bloodshot's always been a bit of a sci-fi kind of a property. He's essentially, at a high level, the Punisher with nanite tech that's making him an unstoppable killing machine. What really got me with this version, I think, was the first that was actually written like a hardcore sci-fi story. You know, we still essentially have the Punisher with the nanite tech and makes him an ultimate killing machine. I mean, that's the property that's cool. But the core of this story and this issue really played with the multiple sets of false memories they used to program and control him, and had much more of kind of a Total Recall kind of a vibe of what's real, what's not, what's going on, you know, and how it's just so much of a mind game for Bloodshot at this point that people are playing with him. And I mean, this was always in the concept, but here it's really brought front and center and done just, I think, exceedingly well, making this much more of a cerebral kind of a story than just he's a guy with a gun who shoots things. To me, that really lifted this property up a notch from what it was before, and, you know, I liked what it was before. I mean, Bloodshot was always a fun property at Valiant. There are a few places where this was a little gory, splash page second from the end in particular, but I guess they felt the need to really sell the reconstruction healing factor for a third time in this issue. I mean, it was kind of overkill on multiple levels, literally. But I really think they brought some solid writing to this, much more than I had expected. I mean, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. Couple of things. I like the inside of the front cover. First off, right out of the gate, they set with the text inside the front cover the overview of the advanced nanites that kind of make up the premise of Bloodshot, that he's got all these nanites in his blood, right? And then they're telling the story, and there's just a bunch of twists and turns in this story that kind of keep you guessing as you're going through the issue. They all worked for me, and instead of being confusing, which they could have easily been, they added to my enjoyment of the issue. It was really well done. I mean, Dwayne Swierczynski, he did a great job on this first issue. This is how a first issue should be. I mean, it did some really great introduction. It laid down the characters. It had a lot of twists and turns that just, it kept me intrigued through the whole reading experience. And then they left me on a note with a, you know, wow, especially that last caption, you know, it's like, okay, I'm in, you know, I want to read more of this. I want to see where this is going. And it's just, they couldn't have done better on this one. They did a great job.
I think they could have toned down the gore just a little bit. I mean,
for you. I can see. You've got me conditioned now that when I read a comic and I see a page like this, I can say, ooh, John's not going to like that page.
Come on. I mean, they've literally shot every limb off him and stuff. I mean, now it's going to rebuild multiple ones. I mean, what the hell? I mean, I get killing him and killing him completely, but for the third time in this issue, they've pretty much, you know, massacred him and stuff. The other thing that left me a little wanting is I'm not quite sure where the next issue's gonna pick up and, you know, what direction it's gonna go, because conceivably he's now a blank slate and back on the side of, you know, his makers hunting the people who tried to free. I mean, there are a lot of directions it could go from here. And on the one hand, that's cool. On the other hand, I would have liked a little bit more of a clear trajectory for the series. but I still think this was exceptionally well done. It felt like a summer blockbuster movie in all of the right ways, or a really good sci-fi TV show sort of a thing. It had, like you said, the twists, the turns, that mind game kind of a, you know, I'm clear on the sequence of events, I'm clear on what's going on, but it left me a little confused of, well, can I really trust what I'm seeing sometimes? And that was the point of the story. So, you know, overall, I've been very pleased with what Valiant's coming out with. This is one of their stronger first issues. I think Harbinger number one was very strong. Exo is good, but doing a little too much of a slow burn.
I think the second issue of Exo kind of got back on track with what I'd like to see. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the third issue of that now, where I think that they're kind of finally in the groove on that title, and we're going to start seeing some stuff going on. I mean, they were,
but it's not until like the
sure
the fifth issue when he gets to the current day.
Yeah.
So arguably that whole first story arc is kind of a, I don't say a prequel or whatever, but set up. It's good, but
they were very proud of themselves about that. I went to the Valiant panel at San Diego, and you know, the boldness of, you know, doing the slow burn on that was something that they were particularly happy with. And it's like I told you know, I could appreciate that. It didn't quite work as much for me, but you know, second issue, you're kind of in the groove on it, so you know, I'll give you that. So the Harbinger was great. I had not read Bloodshot yet at the con, so I couldn't really comment on that when I was talking to them, but you know, they did a great job on this issue.
Yeah,
very solid 4 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, same here. Came very close to getting the 5 for me, but just missed it by a little bit. Definitely looking forward to see where they go with this series, and really what they do just going forward. I think they're a strong publisher.
Did you read the sneak preview of Archer and Armstrong at the back?
I kind of skimmed it, figuring I'd read it when it came out.
Yeah, it looks good. I read through it. It looked good.
Cool.
They're going to keep growing. I think that, you know, they're going to do these 4 for now, and they said they were going to, you know, launch some more books upcoming in a while. You know, they're going to let these kind of get some equilibrium for a bit and then expand the line a little bit. Hopefully they don't go too far too fast, which, you know, publishers have fallen down on in the past.
Well, I mean, that's
the, do it right, you know,
that's the challenge for a new publisher, is you want to have a certain amount of a critical mass of titles to really make the infrastructure kind of make sense and pay for itself. You got to have the editor, the printing, and all that kind of stuff. And there's a certain volume under which it's kind of not as cost effective. But if you grow too far or go past that level, then it's you're putting out more stuff than maybe your audience can juggle, in addition to everything else that's out there. So I see why publishers try to get to, you know, a handful of titles out there. But I think cautiously growing that number of titles in doing so slowly in a controlled manner is, you know, the right way to do it. And they're doing that here. I mean, they're not just saying, boom, here's all 4 titles in 1 week or something. They've spaced them out. They've given time for people to, you know, easily fit them into their budget and stuff. You know, I think that was a smart move.
I'm looking forward to see what they do with their line. You know, they've got a really solid stable of creators. The art's really nice on all the books. You know, they're putting together a new Valiant universe that, yeah, we got to give it some time, but I can see it rivaling the original Valiant universe. I mean, I didn't care for the Valiant universe Mark II that much with the Acclaim stuff, but this is looking pretty good.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Anything else that you read this week that caught your eye?
I read a couple of things. I'm still working on catching up on some stuff, but I haven't done all that much reading since getting back. Cause in addition to going to San Diego, I drive both ways, so I was pretty much faced with the shipment that came the Friday I left, the shipment that came the Friday at con, and then, of course, we're recording in this on Saturday, the shipment that came just yesterday. So I've got quite a few comics to kind of plow through. And with Marvel double shipping stuff, I've got, you know, multiple issues of a couple of things. And it's like, they're coming out with stuff really fast, and I would be okay if they would slow down just a little bit. Yeah. On some of that.
Yeah, no kidding. You read Walking Dead. Did you read 100?
I did read 100.
So there were some scenes in there that I was like, John's not going to like that.
Nope. I think he went for, Kirkman went for the kind of the shock and awe. And I think he's capable of better writing than I thought we saw. I thought it was good, but I still don't think it's at the point where it was early on, where some of the stuff he was pulling out, it's like, wow, I just didn't see that coming, and that was, you know, either thought-provoking or, you know, something. You know, we'll see where he goes. He's obviously being incredibly successful with that title, so I think it's fair to say my opinion's quite probably in the minority there. He's making tons of money on the monthly comic. The trades are doing exceptionally well. So, but part of it is that's just not really in the sweet spot for me. Just in terms of the premise, the concept, or the occasional gore level.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I liked the writing on a couple of the scenes with Negan. Negan? Whatever that bad guy is, the new bad guy. Just that whole thought process he was going through. It worked well for me.
Cool. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it.
Cool. Join us next week when we discuss Blue Beetle 11 from DC, Captain Marvel number 1 from Marvel, and Star Trek 11 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.